Now, the Wild About Pets radio show, the place to learn something new about household pets and wild animals. Here's your host, educator and naturalist, Susan Frank.
Welcome, everyone, to Wild About Pets. This is the show for anyone who likes animals, whether it be pets or wild ones or both. And if you would like to look at photos of the animals we are going to be speaking about today while listening to the program, and if you logged in on TalkZone, just click the purple Look While You Listen button, and this will take you directly to my own website, wildaboutpets.net, and the page of our photos for today. You are probably all familiar with seeing some of the common wildlife that lives in your neighborhoods, whether you live in a city or the country. For example, here in Illinois and in the Midwest, most everyone has seen gray squirrels hopping about wherever there are trees. And I think it's normal to assume that what we see around us is all there is. Of course, we've heard of lots of other animals, to be sure, and we know that people all over the world are interested in them and enjoy knowing about other animals. We watch television, we go to zoos, and we travel to see exotic and unusual animals. What might surprise you is that there are strange and wonderful creatures you don't even know about living right in your own backyards, so to speak. So, what are these animals, and what would be fun to know about them? Today, we're going to hear about some of these hidden mystery animals of the Midwest of the United States. In other shows, we will do this for other parts of the country. And if you're interested, it just might be fun to do this for other parts of the world. My guest today is Lee Hansen from the Emily Oaks Nature Center in Skokie, Illinois. And she's going to be sharing who some of these animals are, tell us some fun facts about them, and also offer relevant yet less known information about some of the more common animals. I'll tell you a little bit about Lee. She has been the facility manager at Emily Oaks Nature Center for over 20 years, where she oversees the programming and operations of a 13-acre natural oasis. She earned her degree in the Fisheries and Wildlife Biology program at Iowa State University and also earned the nickname Ranger Lee. Her passion is for sharing the wonders of the natural world through innovative educational opportunities and outdoor adventures. Wild places and the creatures that share this planet with us are a constant source of inspiration, awe, and joy to Lee. She is also a good, longtime friend of mine. Welcome, Lee. I am thrilled you are here in the studio with me.
It's fun to be here, Susan.
Lee, as I mentioned earlier, most everyone in the Midwest, no matter where they live, has seen gray squirrels. You can see a photo, anybody, if you are looking at the photos with us on the website. And picture number one is a gray squirrel, and you can see some of the familiar reddish-gray coloring. And this is an animal about 8 to 11 inches long with a bushy tail almost as long as itself. Now, there's a variation on the coloring of this creature, however, that puzzle a lot of people, and they don't know if it's a trick of the eye or what are they seeing. Can you tell us about this variation, Lee?
Certainly. They're actually seeing a gray squirrel, but there are, as you said, color variations. And so, in fact, at Emily Oaks Nature Center, we have a small population that appear entirely black. And so, yes, they definitely catch people's eye, and they wonder, is this a different type of squirrel altogether? Just a variation. So happens in Illinois, there is another variation on the gray squirrel that is completely white.
I've never seen a white squirrel, but you know, that reminds me. I read recently there's a story of Olney, Illinois. I don't know if you know about them. I read that there's a colony of several hundred white albino squirrels that have become the town's landmark. And in fact, in 1925, the city passed an ordinance giving them the right of way on city streets.
Absolutely. You have to stop for the white squirrels.
That's fabulous. So, all right, black squirrels are just a variation of the gray squirrels, not a completely different species.
Exactly.
Okay. Now here, there is a picture, everyone, by the way, of this gray squirrel also, and it looks just like a normal squirrel, but it is all black, and that's picture number three. Okay, so here's one of our first surprise animals. Now, no one I've asked so far has known about this one, Lee. It'll be interesting if anybody else out there has seen these animals and know they live there. Lee, what is the type of squirrel that we don't usually see and know that lives around here?
Well, it's another squirrel, as you said, and it is known as a flying squirrel. In our area, it tends to be the southern flying squirrel. And this critter is little known, even though it does frequent our backyards and neighborhoods quite a bit, because it's nocturnal. That is, it comes out at night. And so we just don't see it. I think one of the first experiences I had with a flying squirrel was when one of our residents of the Nature Center brought in some pictures that they had taken of a flying squirrel sitting on its windowsill. Now, they had been putting birdseed out in the wintertime, and the flying squirrel, being an opportunistic critter and looking for a good handout, was visiting their bird feeder at night. And so they started putting out nuts, and we can address that issue a little bit later, but actually the squirrel then got habituated to coming up to the windowsill. Beautiful little creatures, just huge eyes, as is often indicative of nocturnal creatures that are gathering lots of light so they can see. Soft, you know, if you could touch those critters, which I don't recommend, they are wild animals, but just a very, very soft fur and delightful colorations, lighter colors on the bottom, a brownish mousy color on the top, and a small critter, not terribly large, not as big as the gray squirrels or even the fox squirrels that some folks are accustomed to.
So they're what, maybe the size of a hand, would you say?
Possibly, although they might give themselves a greater appearance when they do their so-called flying. And it's not actually that they're flying. It wasn't Bullwinkle, Rocky and Bullwinkle. Isn't that the flying squirrel?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh, that's right. Rocky was supposed to be a flying squirrel.
Yeah.
Well, so, okay, if they're not really flying, what are they doing and how are they doing it?
They're gliding. And just as we glide on a hang glider, their glide is always going to be in a downward motion because they are not going to get any uplift and they're not actually flying and flapping their wings. But what they have is a loose fur, basically, skin that extends from a front leg to a back leg, from an ankle, as it were, to their wrist. And they've got those loose flaps of skin on either side. They're completely fur-covered. And when they extend them, it's like this huge cape that's attached to their ankles.
And, yes, we have a photograph of the flying squirrel with its, arms and legs extended. And you can see that flap, and that's called a patagia?
Yes. Very good.
And then also we have a picture of one flying through the air. That's picture number 6.
Yeah.
Lee, if they're nocturnal, obviously, as you told us, so they're only out at night, is there a way that if someone wants to spot one, what could we do to catch a glimpse of a flying squirrel?
Okay. Well, we certainly, I don't encourage people to feed the wild critters. Certainly we are accustomed to feeding the birds, and that seems to be a perfectly acceptable and method of interacting with those critters. But to habituate an animal to humans, to get them accustomed to coming close to you to get food or to coming close to your home, I would strongly discourage. I can tell you many tales of people who fed gray squirrels, and the squirrels are not stupid. They associated that food from coming through a window or coming through a door with the, human hand. And ultimately, when the food wasn't coming, they ended up coming through the window and coming through the door, chewing through things. So I would discourage that. However, bird feeders away from the home, there's not a human hand in direct relationship to that food source, they will go there. If you want to put nuts out on a bird feeder, if your local ordinances permit that, that's another great way. These are primarily nut eaters, berry eaters, seed eaters, and they're looking for food at night. So then turn your lights on, and no doubt you may see one. You do need to have a live in an area that does have trees and perhaps nut-bearing trees so that they're already there. They tend to spend the winter in tree cavities, holes in trees, and they're kind of communal. They'll all, bunch up together. In fact, there's one tale of somebody who cut down a tree, unfortunately, and up to 50 flying squirrels came running out of that hollow tree. So they spend their winter snuggling up together and at night coming out looking for their food.
And you'll notice on picture number 2, there's this very cute photograph of a squirrel that's on one of the feeders. And for those of you who have bird feeders, you are well aware of how resourceful and how clever squirrels can be at getting to that food. But so the idea of putting it not so close to the house probably is a good idea for gray squirrels and for seeing the flying squirrels. I also read that because they have very large eyes and they're used to the night, that some lights can bother, their eyes. And if you're going to turn on lights maybe they shouldn't be quite like bright spotlights. And if you leave them on for a while, then the flying squirrels will get used to them,
yes,
and then start ignoring those lights and then coming up. And then I suppose you can be looking for them.
Right, right. They get much more accustomed. At one of our wintertime events a couple years back, it took place at night, and we had some what we called wildlife treat trees out. The children put together healthful snacks for the birds and squirrels and hung them on trees. And we had a spotlight on that particular area. People kept coming back saying, oh, my gosh, the flying squirrels, they're hanging out right on those little treat trees, not afraid. There's this bright light shining. What a great opportunity for folks to see them. Just they were appreciative, respectful, and didn't approach them, didn't touch them.
So. Oh, well, I can't wait to try and find one. And I think the reason why I wanted to start with the flying squirrel with you is this is one of those animals that are considered more exotic. Like, flying squirrel, oh, no, they must live somewhere, maybe even another part of the world. And the truth is they're right here in the mm-hmm. Midwest. Well, let's talk about another one that some people don't often see. We sometimes know that there are owls in the area. Sometimes we hear some of the, you know, the great-horned owls. And the great-horned owl, there's a picture next to the episode description of this show. But there's another little type of owl that also lives here. Can you tell us about that owl?
That owl is the screech owl. I had the delight of having one of my favorite screech owl experiences just last winter when Jerry Garden, who is our local owl expert, had an owl prowl going through the Nature Center. We all gathered outside, and he took us to a woodland area. Screech owls are primarily birds of the woodlands, and open woodlands and heavier wooded areas. And he had us all make a circle facing outward and be as still as possible and not make a sound. And then he began to call to them, because in the wintertime tends to be the territorial season for these birds, their mating season. And so he was able to draw in a screech owl that was probably 25 feet from us. And it continued to talk to him, and we got a really great up-close look, a tiny little bird.
And we also have pictures of the screech owls, and it's the eastern type of screech owl. Where are they living then around our neighborhoods?
Well, again, they would need something that would be comparable to a woodland area, and they're going to want to, I believe they're also cavity nesters, so they're going to prefer to be in fact, your picture there does show one poking its head out of a hole in a tree, and so they're going to need some good places to nest, and also space. It's not like they don't take as well to people as, say, Canada geese do or other critters. They need a little bit more space. But we've had them at Emily Oaks, and Emily Oaks is a tiny little oasis in the smack dab in the middle of suburbia. So, you know, there are people's yards right next to where they landed.
If I have a number of trees in my backyard that maybe have some holes, might I have screech owls?
It's a possibility, and you might have a whole mess of other critters that like cavity nesting, too.
Now, okay, how big are screech owls about?
Oh, what'd we say? 8 inches or so?
Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
you extended the fingers of your hand, it would be with its tail probably beyond the fingers of your hand, depending on the size of your hand.
There is a photograph, number 8, of someone holding a screech owl that gives you an idea of the size of it. Now, I want to talk about two things with this. What looks like ears on the top of its head, are those ears, Lee?
They're actually feather tufts. They're tufts of feathers, and their exact purpose, you know, lots of controversy about that. Its ears are actually holes, as it were, in its head, like ours are, and there are often feathers placed around those to help direct sound into the ears.
Right, so that's a misconception mm-hmm. when people think, oh, those are its ears sticking up. Those are just...
Well, particularly since we give them that name, some of the others, like, great horned owl is not a horn, and long-eared owl, and those aren't ears.
Yeah, so that's a good thing to know. And so we see it sitting on a hand. Now, why would someone have this little owl on its hand like this? And are we suggesting that this is a pet?
Again, you know, any of the critters we're talking about today are wild animals and should be treated with respect and treated as wild animals. We don't want to encourage them to approach us. We don't want to habituate them to human beings with food, because it ends up being a disastrous result for the critters and people. In this case, my guess is we've got a falconer. They have a leather glove on to protect themselves from the feet of that critter. And who knows? Maybe this is a featured animal at a rehab center used for educational purposes. Did it get hit by a car? Screech owls are often hit by cars, unfortunately.
Oh.
And was it injured and could not be released? That might be the case.
And what is a falconer, briefly?
That is somebody who is licensed, by the way. Not anybody can just put on a leather glove and claim to be a falconer. You need to be licensed to handle and care for these creatures. And some falconers use the birds also for sport, because the birds' instincts are to hunt, and so they're used to hunt.
Yeah, so this is a meat-eating, hunting animal.
Mm-hmm, carnivore. Of course, this one being a smaller owl, it's going for smaller creatures, mice. Don't know that it could take down a rabbit, some larger birds. That it does actually manage to get doves sometimes. So, you know, insects, frogs, you name it, any small critter, it's on its diet.
Okay. I will be doing a show in a couple weeks about those people who work in rehabilitation centers. So we'll hear about what is their job and what is their purpose and what kind of animals come to them. So that will be something for the future that people might want to listen to. There is an animal that I think is more common. People are going to see it more often, but at the same time, I think there's a lot of people who aren't quite sure what this very odd creature that has this pink nose, like bald-looking tail, and sometimes has this very odd behavior of looking dead, playing possum, which gives you a clue to this animal. What is this animal? Lee, can you tell us about the Virginia opossum?
Yes, and, you know, I'm going to champion the opossum. I think it gets a bad rap. Most people's experiences with an opossum, excuse me, are either seeing it dead along the side of the road or finding it in their garage. Hence, the animal's feeling terrified and cornered, and so is reacting defensively. And or else it's, you know, burrowing under their porch, and now they've got to remove it. So people tend to have negative experiences with opossums. When they see an opossum in their garage, for instance, they'll talk about seeing that grin of all those teeth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that pointy snout and those beady black eyes and that pink nose and that grin of teeth. It has 50 teeth. That's more than you and I have, not put together, but depending on how your dental work has gone. But nonetheless, and then it's cornered, so it's going to back away. It's going to be hissing and making noises and looking fierce, and people think it's a fearsome creature. Opossums are actually very gentle creatures. Some would claim they're dim-witted. I don't know that I have any studies on that, but they're slow-moving, and they are indeed gentle creatures.
And there's this cute picture where there's a mom carrying her babies, and there's something very unusual about this particular animal also that's kind of rare. Can you tell us about how they, when they first give birth, you know, how they have their babies, or what is so unusual about?
Well, what's really cool about opossums, and I could go on and on, and perhaps I will, but they are North America's only marsupial. And a marsupial is something that has a pouch where it raises its young. It gives live birth, but the young have to make their way into the pouch. So you can put it on the same page as kangaroos and koala bears, but it's North America's only marsupial, and a very ancient creature, by the way, too. Not this particular picture, but...
Yes, in fact, I read that they were around when dinosaurs were around, and they have still existed.
Yes, yes.
That's fairly amazing. Is there anything else before we go on break that you wanted to tell us about? Okay, we'll hear one more thing, and then we'll take a break. Go on.
Okay. Just want to mention that when I got in my car this morning, it was 10 degrees, and I was thinking about opossums. They have very little hair, almost none on their tails, and very little hair, almost none on their ears, and oftentimes they get frostbite. So you'll see them walking around with ears that are partial, and it's because of the cold.
Oh, just like us. But obviously those ears look probably very thin, the tissue.
Yeah, they need some earmuffs. We need to work on that.
All right. With that, we're going to take a short break. Please stay tuned. We'll be back with more right after this.